We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 9, Answers by Citing the Lord's Version, text number 28. Kridasya Mokha Sankalpa Urna Napir Yathor Nule Nute Urna Napir Yathor Nute Tathatat Vishayam Dehi Manisham Mai Madhava. Kridasi, as you play, Amogha, infallible, Sankalpa, determination, Urna Nabhihi, the spider, Yadha, as much as, Urnute, covers, Tadha, so and so, Tat Vishayam, in the subject of all those, Dehi, do let me know, Manisham, philosophy, Mai, unto me, Madhava, O master of all energies. Translation: O master of all energies, please tell me philosophically all about them. You play like a spider that covers itself by its own energy, and your determination is infallible. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. By the inconceivable energy of the Lord, every creative element has its own potencies. Known as the potency of the elements, potency of the knowledge, and potency of different actions and reactions. By a combination of such potential energies of the Lord, there is the manifestation of creation, maintenance, and annihilation in due course of time, and by different agents like Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains, and Lord Shiva destroys. But all such agents and creative energies are emanation from the Lord. And as such, there is nothing except the Lord, or the one supreme source of different diversities. The exact example is the spider and spider's web. The web is created by the spider, and it is maintained by the spider, and as soon as the spider likes, the whole thing is wound up within the spider. The spider is covered within the web. If an insignificant spider is so powerful as to act according to its will, why can't the Supreme Being act by His supreme will in the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the cosmic manifestation? By the grace of the Lord, a devotee like Brahma, or one in his chain of disciplic succession, can understand the almighty personality of Godhead eternally engaged in his transcendental pastimes in the region of different energies. Om jnanatimirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurunmiritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri chaitanya manobhishtam sthapitam yena bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaghanitamscha हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पदे गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः
जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे भूतैर्महाद्भिर्य इमा पुरो विभु निर्माय शेते यदमूष पुरुष भुङ्क्ते गुणान् षोडश षोडशात्मक सोलङ्कृषीष्ट भगवान् वचांसि मे
हरे कृष्णा. दिस् इस् ए वेरि वण्डर्फुल् वर्स् बिकास् दिस् एलोबरेट्स् एण्ड् एक्स्प्लेन्स् द वैष्णव फिलोसफि. सो दिस् वर्स् इस् क्वैट् फेमस् एस् वेल् एण्ड् द एक्साम्पल् गिवन् हियर् इट्सेल्फ् इस् वेरि फेमस्. दट् इस् of a spider, how the spider creates a web, maintains it, and destroys the whole thing by winding it. In the same way, the Supreme Lord has his potencies by which he can do the creation, maintenance, and destruction. So this verse is the crux of Vaishnava philosophy when we compare our philosophy with impersonal philosophy. So in the impersonal philosophy, one who actually knows the impersonal philosophy, he knows very well that the Supreme Absolute Truth is devoid of energies. This is their philosophy. So when you get into the crux of the Mayavad philosophy, the crux is that the Supreme Absolute Truth is devoid of any kinds of energies. So this is the most important aspect. So one who is really a Mayavadi, he knows he must deny the all energies of the Lord. Okay, I will explain further. Before that, let's try to see what kind of Mayavadis are there in this world at this point. Many of the so-called Mayavadis or impersonalists, they talk elaborately about mercy of the Supreme Absolute. They even talk about pastimes of the Supreme Absolute. So these kind of people are actually confused people. They cannot be really classified as strict Mayavadis, because strict Mayavadi means he must deny all the energies of the Lord, including the Kripa Shakti, the mercy aspect of the Lord. Then we can actually label them as Mayavadis. One of the devotees was giving seminars in an impersonal organization. It is a spiritual organization in Chennai, and they are primarily teaching impersonal philosophy, and this devotee was presenting Bhagavad Gita to them. So it's a natural question, because there will be straight contradiction in our presentation, because our philosophy is directly contradicting the Mayavad philosophy of their understanding that the Supreme Absolute Truth is devoid of any form and also devoid of any qualities, devoid of any activities, and ultimately devoid of any kind of energies. So this devotee told that actually there is not much issue with that, because actually they are not impersonalists. They are not really Mayavadis. They are simply confused people. So if we present Vaishnava philosophy, Bhagavad Gita he was presenting, then it's okay. They are not arguing anything. They are listening and accepting. Just from the purport explaining, from the text explaining each verse of Bhagavad Gita, they are accepting. So he was presenting. But we don't know what will happen after that. But he was actually preaching to impersonalists, the so-called impersonalists, because they are not actually strict impersonalists or Mayavadis. Rather, they are just confused people. So, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, we can see real impersonalists. Those who are learned, those who are scholarly, and they actually know the philosophy, like Prakashananda Saraswati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. They actually knew the philosophy. And they denied the energy of the Lord. And they denied the mercy aspect of the Lord. or all other features in the form of energies, because that is ultimately Mayavada philosophy. However, there is very interesting difference between the so-called impersonalist or strict impersonalist of this time and the impersonalist, those who presented that time. Because in the Vedic condition, when there is an argument, if one is ready to defeat that argument, then one who got defeated is ready to surrender and accept the philosophy along with the followers. This is Vedic tradition. We can see in the past times of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Keshava Kashmiri, he had so many disciples. And the Keshava Kashmiri, he was approaching different people, and ultimately he came to Nadia, and the scholars of Nadia tactfully arranged Mahaprabhu, who was a young boy, to be the representative of all the scholars, thinking that if Mahaprabhu get defeated, it's all right, because he's just a young boy. But if he wins, then it is of great benefit, because we are the elderly people, we are the most scholarly people, but this boy has defeated, so our fame will again spread. So in that way, Mahaprabhu, as a young scholar, approached Keshava Kashmiri, and Keshava Kashmiri narrated around 100 or so verses on Ganga, glorifying Mother Ganga. And it was interesting that Mahaprabhu could remember all the 100 verses, and he could point out the mistakes in his composition. Say, one mistake was the same meaning, the word of same meaning was repeated 2 times in a 1 verse. And one use of Mother Parvati was wrong in the verses. Like that, very specific errors were pointed out by Mahaprabhu himself. Then Keshava Kashmiri surrendered. Then what happened? He and his followers also surrendered. So this is the standard. However, they had that integrity. So Vedic culture means there is integrity. If there is a debate, if one gets defeated, they are ready to surrender. First, they are ready to accept. However, people of this time, even if they bring forth an argument, and even if we defeat them by logical reason, still they will not accept. They may just say, no, that is your belief. After accepting, after they are stuck with no arguments, they can come to a stage, we present the arguments and they are stuck. They have no more arguments, still they are not ready to accept or surrender. They will make a final statement, oh, that's your belief. That's your belief. That's it. Finished. Brush it aside. So this is lacking integrity, because what can we accept in this Kali Yuga from people? So, of course, we are not debaters. We are not debaters. Now, our aim is not to debate and win. In the university, there is a debating club. There are many people who are interested in debating. So the whole purpose is they will have a topic, and there will be a group of students, and back and forth they argue, they debate. And who can win in the argument? So their argument is substantiated and it is proven, and that has to be accepted, at least for that time. However, our aim is not to debate. And if we are Madhyama Adhikaris who are preaching, even if we get defeated, still we don't accept their point of view. That is against our principles, right? If we get defeated, still our faith must remain intact. Not that some argument came, and if we tried to defend, and if we tried to argue, but we got defended, immediately there is a confusion. If there is a confusion, it means that such a devotee is in the Kanishtha platform, in the neophyte platform. One time, so happened that my father, my dad, went to one ISKCON temple in our native place. And he is very good in arguments. So he went, and he was going for some time. So one lady preacher, because my father is quite old, so this lady preacher became very enthusiastic, and he wanted to convert him into a devotee out of mercy. And she started preaching, so he heard everything. He doesn't have any problem hearing, so he heard everything. And after that, he has his very a trump card, we can say. One book by Aurobindo. He's a Mayavadi, very famous. And some of the arguments are strong arguments. So he took his book on essays on Gita. And he took the first part and, you know, he took a photocopy. He took a copy and he gave to her and asked her to read and discuss. And after reading that, she got confused. And after that, it took a few devotees to pacify her and to make her normal. So this is what happens if our faith is not very strong and if we try to preach. So we have to preach according to our capacity. We have to enter into a realm of debate according to our capacity. Otherwise, we can be in trouble. So it can be a test to our own faith. So many times that can happen when a new devotee goes on books, because there is no guarantee who you are going to meet with. And people can tell any kind of things. And one can be shaken sometimes. There is a very wonderful example on this where a devotee didn't get bewildered. So this is an example of His Grace Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, who is a scholar within ISKCON, and he has written many books and articles. So he was a young brahmachari, or I don't know if he was a brahmachari or not, maybe a full-time devotee. And he was up in the street and trying to distribute books. So he was doing that for some time. He was just very new and he was just working so hard, day after day, week after week. So one person was noticing this. He saw Prabhu distributing books and, you know, just working hard and there is not so much of result. So one day, this person approached Ravindra Swarup Prabhu and told him, "Why are you working so hard? What is the point? Because ultimately, who you are working for, he must be enjoying. You are just simply working hard. See your situation, see your health, see your condition. Every day, morning till night, and what is the kind of result that you get? You are just simply wasting your time. Do something productive." We might have heard the same argument many times in street. People say, "Go get a job." Have you heard this? "Go get a job. You know, don't waste time. Go get a job." You know. So this is the similar kind of argument. Then Ravindra Swarup Prabhu thought, you know, this made him think. Why? What is he doing? And why he is doing this activity? So he came upon the conclusion that, yes, I am working very hard and health is also getting affected. But think about Srila Prabhupada, his spiritual master. He is working so much more than I do. He is in his old age and the amount of work he is doing is so much. And ultimately, the work I am doing is only for my benefit. This is the real swarthagati, as Prahlad Maharaj says, "Name nate vidu swarthagatim hi Vishnu." So they don't know the real self-interest while speaking to the materialistic people. So swarthagati is self-interest, or in one sense, selfishness. But the real selfishness is very positive. That is swarthagati. Generally, swartha has a negative connotation. The swartha means selfishness. So one shouldn't be swarth. It's a negative quality. But the real swarth, the real self-interest is being a devotee of the Lord and serving the devotee. So he understood, actually, I am working hard for my own benefit. And for whom I am working, Srila Prabhupada, he is working even harder than me. So he came upon the conclusion, yes, I am doing this service for my benefit and the benefit of spiritual master and the whole world. So there is nothing negative about it, but it is only positive. So this was the conclusion. So he wasn't shaken at all. So these are the kind of arguments. So we came to the point of argument starting from the arguments of Mayavad philosophers who were very powerful. They provide so many kinds of arguments. And the basis of argument is that they deny the energy of the Lord. So now the question comes, why do they deny the energy of the Lord? Okay, there's a reason for that. It is very beautifully explained in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Why do Shankaracharya and his followers deny the energy of the Lord. The reason is, if we see this world, the premise number one, the point number one, we can see that the Lord must be unchangeable. The supreme absolute truth, by definition, shouldn't change. Does that make sense? Say we, our body is constantly changing. So we can understand our body is not supreme absolute truth. Correct? It's a changing thing. So when we compare, when we talk about the supreme absolute truth, by definition, he shouldn't change. Whatever it is, shouldn't change. However, when we see this world, this is a world of change. Is it correct? Always there is change happening. So when they see the change of this world, that implies that this is something material. This cannot be the absolute. Right? It makes sense. Because the absolute shouldn't change. And what we see in this world, everything is changing. So the conclusion is that it means the absolute shouldn't change, and all these energies, for example, we can see this world is different kinds of energies, though material energy, still energies. So there shouldn't be any change if it is absolute. So the absolute must be devoid of energies. Devoid of energies, and then the question comes, what about this world? Because this is full of energies and it is full of changes. So, as a point number two, they deny the energy in itself and call it illusion. Can you understand the point? So, point number one, the supreme absolute truth, this is where it is coming from, the supreme absolute truth must be devoid of any change. Correct? Because the material, everything is changing, so the supreme absolute must not change. At the same time, we can only see changes in this world. So, this cannot be true. The world cannot be true. That's where it is coming. Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. That's where it is coming. The what is in this world, it is not true. Meaning, it doesn't even exist, they say. So, it is denied and it's not existing. So, it is illusion. So, the feeling of this world in itself, they call as illusion. So, the Lord is not changing, and whatever is seeing in this energy, it is illusion. So, the problem is solved. Can you see logically how this problem is solved? The Lord doesn't have any energies, and whatever we see here, it is illusion. So, the problem is solved. So, this is called Vivartavad. Vivarta. Vivarta means the logic, the argument of illusion. So, the energies of the Supreme Lord is denied or dismissed on the basis of illusion. So that's where the illusion principle is coming for the Mayavadis, for the impersonalist. So, okay, nothing is existing. Whatever we feel here, it is just illusion. So, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains very beautifully that, as quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's conversation to Prakashananda Saraswati, that Shankaracharya wrote commentary on Vedanta Sutra assuming or just showing that as if Vyasadeva has made some mistake. So when he presents the creation and all the manifestation of this world, and at the same time the Supreme Absolute is present as a person, he explained everything based on the principle of Vivarta, the principle of illusion, as if he were doing a favor to Vyasadeva, correcting his mistakes. So, the Bengali it is mentioned, Vyasa Bhrant, the word Bhrant is used, as if gone little, crazy or gone little crazy. And so, I am doing a favor in that way, I am writing a commentary on Vedanta Sutra in the form of Sharirika Bhashya. So then, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu denies that. What is wrong? So there the question comes, what is actually wrong in it? How can we deny, we can understand from our perspective that, yes, this world is changing, but at the same time the material energy is temporary or maternal, eternal? Material energy is
temporary.
Okay, some people are saying temporary, some people are saying eternal. Material energy is eternal, but material manifestation is
temporary.
So it is very important, very essential aspect of our philosophy. So we understand that the material energy is permanent, it is eternal, even though it is manifested temporarily. Now, the point is, so the Lord is present, that is the Supreme Absolute Truth, and this energy is also absolute in the sense it is eternal, it is present all the time. And it is subservient to the Supreme Absolute Truth. So the Lord has multifarious energies. Parasya Shaktir Vividheva Shruyate. So these multifarious energies are under the direction of the Supreme Absolute Truth. So when we talk about transformations of this world, our philosophy says these are transformations of the energies of the Lord, as it is mentioned in this verse. They are transformations of energies of the Lord, but the Lord himself is not transforming. Very important. So our philosophy, it is called Parinamavad. Parinama. Parinama means evolution or transformation. So we are talking about transformation of energies of the Lord, where the Lord remains as he is, where the energies are transforming, which we can see in front of our eyes, and we don't deny that transformation, and we don't deny them as illusion, but we say it is the reality. Then the question comes, what is then illusion? What is illusion then? Exactly, that's right. That which is not, that which is temporary, if you ascribe eternality to something which is temporary, then it is illusion. Because Maya means that which is not. So the material energy in itself is not Maya as such. But when we understand, or when we think that it is eternal, and also this is the source of my pleasure, when we think like that, the whole world is thinking like that, then that is called Maya. So when we view the material energy with the vision of enjoyment, then that vision is the vision of Maya. But the energy in itself, it is not Maya. It's not illusory. It is the reality, even though it is manifested temporarily. So this is the crux of difference between the Mayavad philosophy and our philosophy in terms of different energies of the Lord. Now, I have to take two aspects of this philosophy. One aspect is interesting. That is, the purport is starting by the term inconceivable energy. By the inconceivable energy of the Lord, every creative element has its own potencies, known as the potency of the element, potency of knowledge, and potency of different actions and reactions. By a combination of potential energies of the Lord, there is the manifestation of creation, maintenance, and annihilation in due course of time and by different agents. And the agents are given like Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu, like that. So here, how the Lord is the possessor of all the energies. Just like if you pick a person, he has different qualities. Right? If you pick Jai Jagannath Prabhu, now he dances ecstatically in Kirtan, for example. That is his quality. And he is smiling and dancing. So it's his quality. So we cannot separate that quality from the person. Isn't it right? So when we talk about that quality, we imply that person. And the quality doesn't have any separate existence. Similarly, when we talk about the Lord, his energies are resting upon him. And the energies has complete dependence on the Supreme Absolute Truth. So here, the most amazing thing happens, that even though the whole thing happens to the energies of the Lord, still nothing happens to the Lord. the Lord remains aloof from his creation. In 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, this inconceivable aspect is mentioned. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matsani sarvabhudani name teshu nachaham teshu avastitaha. Then Krishna says, name mastani bhutani pashyame yoga maishiram yoga bhrinnadipi yogasto. Remember? Mama Buddha Bhavana. So here Krishna makes a contradiction that first he says, Maya Tatamidam Sarvam Jagata Vyakta Murtina. By my inconceivable energy, by my inconceivable potency, I pervade the whole universe. The whole creation is pervaded by the Lord through his impersonal aspect. Then he says, Mayatatamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matsthani sarvabhutani. And the whole material creation, including the living entities, are resting upon the Supreme Absolute Truth. So when we hear the whole energies and whole creation and all the living entities, all the planets, everything is resting upon the Supreme Lord. When we hear that, materially speaking, one can take the example of Atlas. You know the Atlas, what he does? He carries the globe. The earth is carried by the Atlas. So there is a strain. It is like an eternal curse. You know, he is in an eternal curse. He is just holding the weight. So that is the initial conception we can come at when you think about the Supreme Lord holding the whole universe. And in the next verse he says, Na matsani bhutani. Then he denies that fact. He says, okay, one sense he says, I am carrying everything. But next he says, I am not actually carrying anything. Pashyame yoga maishiram. See my inconceivable potency. This is really inconceivable. He is carrying everything and at the same time he is not carrying anything. How is it possible? We can explain just in terms of logic that yes, he can carry through his energies. And what kind of energies? Inconceivable energy. So in our philosophy, the term inconceivable is very important. So our philosophy is not Bheda Bheda Tattva, but it is Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Because how the whole material energy functions, and the Lord doesn't have to do anything. Even he doesn't have to desire. Everything is automatically taken care. How it happens, that is through the inconceivable energy of the Lord, which is not something which we can conceive so easily. So I cannot explain the inconceivable energy of the Lord, right? Because we can't even conceive. But by definition, it is inconceivable. So we can just approach and we can explain a little bit and just leave it there. We cannot really explain the inconceivable energy of the Lord by definition because we can't conceive it. So this is the very interesting element in our philosophy, the inconceivable energy of the Lord. And the Lord himself manifests inconceivable aspect many times. So that is the next thing that I would like to explain. How the Lord manifests his inconceivable aspect, which is furthermore inconceivable, and which is even denying my initial statement that there is no change to the Supreme Absolute Truth. That is, if you see Krishna appearing in the so-called material world, the Lord comes as a baby, just like any other babies, right? Then what happens to him? He grows. Huh? Not necessarily fast, he grows. Maybe a bit faster than others, but still, his life is classified just like anyone else's life. Is it right? What is Krishna's balya? What is the next? Pauganda? Then? Kaumara? Or Kaishora? Right? Kaishora. So Krishna's life is classified. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, for any living entity, his life is also classified. How is it classified? Kaumaram Yavanam Jara. We cannot see Jara in Krishna's life. But Kaumaram, actually, Kaumaram we can see. Yavanam we can see. So starting from Balyam we can see. We can see Paugandam we can see. Then we can see Kaishwaram we can see. So we can see even Krishna is growing. So we, by definition we told that Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is not subject to any change. He is not affected by the time factor. We are affected by the time factor. We don't have to do anything to get older. Do we have to do anything specific to get older? Just eat and, you know, continue life. It will happen automatically. But for the Lord, how is it possible? And in Bhagavatam, in the 8th chapter of 10th canto, verse number 22, Shukadeva Goswami says, Kalena Vrajadalpena Gokule Ramakeshavu Janubhyam Sahapanibhyam Ringamano Vijahrutuhu. So it's mentioned that in Gokul Vrindavan, Ramakeshavu, both Krishna and Balaram, they started using their feet and their knee. Janupyam sahapanipyam. They started using the pani, the hands and the knee to move around. Why? Because the time has passed after his birth. What does that mean? What does that mean? A change. Now what Krishna is doing now? He's crawling. Krishna is starting his crawling pastimes. So Krishna was just lying down. He couldn't move. Practically he was just, you know, just moving, flicking his feet. That's how he killed Shakatasur, right? And he killed Putana just by sucking the milk from her breast. So he, practically speaking, he just performed childhood activities. He couldn't even move. And Chakrasa just by flicking his feet. That's it. Now, Kalena Vrajadalpena, as time passed, as if time were affecting Krishna's growth. Gokule Ramakeshavu. In Gokul, Krishna and Balaram, they started crawling. And then we can see, okay, he started crawling, then he started walking. So how does that change possible for the Supreme Absolute Truth when we say that we deny any change for the Supreme Absolute Truth? How is it possible? The forms are eternal. Yeah, that's right. The forms are eternal. And how that forms are eternal? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains this intricate point. How Krishna's all forms are eternal. Starting from his birth to Kaishwara, all the forms are eternal, means all the time they are present. How? Again, there are a few, couple of explanations we can give to this. One, his form is prakata at some point and aprakata at some point. Right? It manifests in Vrindavan sometimes and sometimes it doesn't manifest. So, even though currently in Vrindavan, if we go, we don't see Krishna's pastimes, but it is aprakata, it is present. The pastimes are going on. Second, Krishna's pastimes are going on in different universes, one after the another. Just like if there's a circus, goes from one city to the next. In the same way, Krishna, along with entourage, are going from one universe to the next universe and they are enacting pastimes. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives the example of a torch hung on a rope. Okay, we have a torch light hung on a rope and you whirl it, you just rotate it fast. If you rotate fast enough, you can see a continuous light. You can just see a continuous circle of light. So in the same way, the Lord's pastimes are happening all the time. Now, in one universe, Krishna is just born, now also. And in one universe, Krishna has grown up a little bit. And in another universe, so there are unlimited universes practically, and unlimited Krishna's pastimes are going on. In that way, Krishna's form is eternal. So, even though we see the apparent growth for Krishna's body, all the forms are his swarup. All his forms are eternally manifest. They are Swarup. They are his original form. So it's not we say, okay, one, Krishna's only the Kaishor form is Swarup. No. Krishna's all the Balya form, that is also Swarup. It is eternal form. Without any change. So this is indeed inconceivable. So this is another aspect of inconceivable energy of the Lord. Inconceivable aspect of Krishna himself. Another inconceivable aspect of Krishna is mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. He says, Ajobisan aviyatma bhutana mishrobisan prakritim samadhishtaya sambhavami atma mayaya. Krishna appears in this world. He says, Ajobisan, even though I never take birth, still I appear in this world by the internal potency, by the yogamaya potency of the Lord. So the Lord apparently looks like appears in this world. But actually, he's never touching the material energy as we do. This is a very interesting difference. Even though the Lord is present apparently in this material world, he's never in the material world. He's never in the material world. He is always in his dham, here itself. Even though in the Vrindavan, he is actually the dham. And dham is known different from the dham in the spiritual world. And the Lord is never touching the material ground at all. He's in the dham always. All his pastimes are in the dham, in his own yogamaya energy. And even though it can look like he is touching the material energy, for him it is never material. For him, it is just one of his energy, and it has any negative implication for him. Whereas for us, if we touch the material energy, there are implications. So this is again another inconceivable aspect of Krishna. So here, the example of spider is so wonderful that spider has one potency, that is, it can create a web and it can maintain to catch his prey. And after that, he can wind the whole web. And then he continues his life. So Bhagavatam says, then why not for the Supreme Absolute Truth, who has multifarious energies, unlimited energies. So for him, creation is something which is so much difficult. It is pretty easy for him because the energies will take care of that. We would like to do so, but it never happens for us. We like that principle, but it doesn't happen. Now, again, talking a little bit further on the inconceivable aspect of the Lord. Even the form of Krishna himself is inconceivable. The form of Krishna himself is inconceivable. If you try to conceive even the form of Krishna, it is difficult. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, there is a very wonderful verse showing this. When Krishna was leaving Hastinapur, all the Pandava brothers, they followed Krishna. And there was a big army following, giving him a march past, you know. The whole battalion is actually waiting and giving company for the Supreme Absolute Truth. So it is mentioned that there is a beautiful rasa of exchange happening between Krishna and his devotees. Think that Krishna, the most attractive personality in this world, in the whole world, whole creation, whole universe, whole spiritual material creation, is with you for a long period of time, you know, as long as about 1 year. Think about it. How much attachment one would develop. And that too, devotees of pure heart, who are 100% pure devotees, and they are eternal associates of the Lord. They are Pandavas. They were with the Lord in Hastinapur for a prolonged period of time, and now the Lord is departing from Hastinapur. So Yudhishthira Maharaj, he arranged a big army to follow the Lord, to give protection to the Lord, even though he is, you know, Ajita. He is, no one can win, no one can conquer Krishna. Still, out of love for Krishna, Yudhishthira Maharaj arranged a big army. So they are escorting. And personally, all the brothers are giving company to Krishna. So one is holding the umbrella, one is fanning chamara. Some are throwing flowers in the feet, and somebody is just assisting him. Like that, all the brothers were following Lord Krishna to the chariot. So there is a very wonderful verse describing this scene. It says,
Sita tapatrair javaneir baskritair prasuna varshair abhivarshidhapati pishangavasa vanamalaya bhavo ghano yadharkod bachapa vaidyutai.
So it is mentioned, this is a verse of contradiction. Why is it a verse of contradiction? Because the Krishna's form is described and the scene is described, how Krishna is walking to the chariot to depart from Hastinapur. So it is mentioned, there was the presence of the Lord was the simultaneous occurrence of rainbow, dark cloud, okay, moon, and lightning. Is it possible practically to have all these things simultaneously? When the whole sky is covered with dark bluish cloud, is it possible to see moon? No. And then, is it possible to see beautiful rainbow? Is it possible? No, if it's completely clouded, it's about completely clouded, then you cannot see rainbow. Then you cannot see moon, because moon generally appears. You know, it's the beginning of the night, you know, it appears. Otherwise, it's not possible. And then, so moon is there, and this the night is, the cloud is completely in its darkness, bluish dark, and there is the rainbow, and on top of that, there is lightning striking. So imagine all these four things simultaneously occurring, which is practically impossible. But the scene was such that as if the whole thing is happening simultaneously. While there is a white umbrella holding upon the Lord, and there is a chamara fanning, and the flowers are flowing, and the whole thing, it looks like the whole atmosphere has completely changed. So it is mentioned, one cannot conceive of the beauty of the Lord. It's impossible to conceive the beauty of the Lord, which is practically inconceivable. So it is mentioned that we have some realization of Krishna by worshipping the Lord in the form of the deity. But when one is completely realized, and when one goes to the spiritual world, it is mentioned, when one actually sees Krishna, one faints. One cannot practically offer prayers. We may think, okay, if we see Krishna, okay, I have such and such prayers to offer. I have to tell such and such things. I have to reveal my heart in such and such way. However, Krishna is so beautiful, so attractive, that if one sees, one faints. Then Krishna has to give mercy to revive. So that is the inconceivable beauty of the Lord. And similarly, the relation of Krishna to his devotees are also very inconceivable. Such that many times we can see the pastimes where when Krishna leaves one place, devotees can faint. Even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime, when Lord Chaitanya leaves the association of his devotees, the devotees would faint. This is inconceivable, isn't it? Can we see anyone fainting? Because he or she is leaving our home, fainting. It is, it's inconceivable to our material calculation. When Gadadhar Pandit was in association of Lord Chaitanya in Jagannath Puri, and Mahaprabhu decided to leave Jagannath Puri, and Gadadhar Pandit had taken the vow of Kshetra Sannyas that he would serve in Tota Gopinath temple for whole of his life. So that is called Kshetra Sannyas. So, Gadadhar Pandit wanted to leave Jagannath Puri and accompany Lord Chaitanya. So he started following Lord Chaitanya. So when Mahaprabhu noted that, he said, you know, you cannot follow because you have taken the vow of Kshetra Sannyas. Otherwise people will criticize me for you not following your promise. So Gadadhar Pandit says, doesn't matter, let them criticize, whatever happens, I want to follow you. Then Mahaprabhu said, no, that's not okay. Then Gadadhar Pandit took another reason. He said, look, I will follow you through a different path. So people don't know where I have gone. So that way it will be neutralized. Mahaprabhu denied. And at one point, Mahaprabhu said, you stay here and I am leaving. Mm-hmm. So Mahaprabhu left and Gadadhar Pandit collapsed, fainted. So this is the power of true love, which is again inconceivable. So if you consider Krishna consciousness, bhakti in itself is inconceivable. If you pick any aspect of bhakti, is inconceivable. It is practically inconceivable that this is today Sunday morning and there are devotees 4:30 in the morning in this temple. It is inconceivable to material calculation. Because the Maya is so powerful in this age of Kali, people are sleeping. You know, people are going to sleep, they are going to bed by the time we get up in the morning. Because they had the Saturday night, and by the time they go home, it is 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock. So by the time where they are sleeping, that's the time we are getting up. So that in itself is inconceivable on a practical basis. So I stop here and see, is there any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Shankaracharya is often referred to as a great Vaishnava.
Yes.
His followers are classified as followers of Mayavada philosophy.
Yeah.
How is it? Is there a contradiction there?
There is no contradiction. Shankaracharya is a great Vaishnava because he is Lord Shiva himself, and Lord Shiva is the greatest of the Vaishnavas, Vaishnavana Yatha Shambhu. And Shankaracharya did his task according to the order of Vishnu. So one can question why Vishnu did such a criminal act in one sense. Because he is deviating people from the real philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Why did Vishnu do? So the Lord acts according to the desire of the living entities. So why there are people who want to follow the Mayavad teachings of Shankaracharya? Because they have a desire to be deviant from the real teachings. In the Kali Yuga, people have that tendency. And that desire is being fulfilled by the Mayavada philosophy according to the sanction of the Supreme Lord himself. So Shankaracharya did the needful task. However, and those who are following, they have the tendency not to follow the order of the Lord. So they want to be religious and they want to be pious. But at the same time, they don't want to surrender unto Krishna. So this is the mechanism through which that is satisfied. So those who follow that philosophy are not considered devotees. Just like Maya Devi is a great devotee of the Lord, right? But one who get in the trap of Maya is in Maya, is not acting as a devotee. So Maya is doing a thankless task, so as Lord Shiva in the form of Shankaracharya. So ultimately it is because of the desire of the living entities. It is nothing wrong with Lord Shiva, it's nothing wrong with the Supreme Lord also. So they want something to get deviation, so that is provided. And so see, now there is Mayavad philosophy, and if you see the West, the impersonalism is quite strong. People don't want to surrender, right? People don't want to surrender. And they have so many other means to do so. In the Vedic culture, for example, people wanted to follow Vedas to some degree. So the Vedas are introduced and it is interpreted in such a way that they don't want to surrender to Krishna. So this being atheist in one sense, being going, oh sorry, to go away from Krishna, that propensity is satisfied within the realm of Vedas, because that was the context. Now, people don't bother about Vedas at all, generally, if you see, even in India, in the West, everywhere the same. So they have so many other reasons not to follow the orders of Krishna. So it's just the time and circumstance, that's all. There is other example, and at the same time, Lord Shiva, he performed one more wonderful thing, that is, he removed the Buddhism and brought people back to Vedas. So this is actually, this is a bigger plan is getting unfolded at that point. So because of Buddhism, say Buddha again. Buddha is the Lord himself, right? Buddha is Lord himself. However, one who follows Buddha is considered a voidist, an atheist. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, right? Nirvishesha. So one is following Buddha, his teaching, still he is considered an atheist or voidist. Why? Because he came with a mission to stop the animal sacrifice, to stop the cruelty to animals. So actually the original, the master of animal protection in one sense, at the recent time, Krishna is of course the master of animal protection. But one who acted just for the animal cruelty, against the animal cruelty, that is Lord Buddha. Right? Not the, you know, the so-called, so many organizations are there. PETA and, you know, so many things are there. They are not the original. Actually, Buddha started with that. Okay? That was his organization. He came up with the whole philosophy. Buddha sutras are there. He defeated the contemporary Vedic scholars with Buddha sutras. They had debates. In debate, all the Vedic scholars got defeated. And then he established Buddha Sutra and he rejected Vedas and established. So it's a slow plan. So then Shankaracharya came and then he could bring back to the Vedas at the same time. He didn't establish anything about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Because there were enough people who were not ready for that. Then the Vaishnava philosophy, which is the actual philosophy of the Vedas, got unfolded in due course of time. After the appearance of Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and ultimately it came to its pinnacle by the appearance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like that. Yeah. Yes. Varies from individual to individual, but generally they are Mayavadis to some degree. The reason is ultimately they deny the form of the Lord. Ultimately, all these teachings, ultimately they deny the form of the Lord. So that is an offense against the Lord. If I say you don't exist, and if I act considering your inexistence, that is an offense unto you. Is it right? Say for example, you are asking this question, and if I don't answer, or if you ask one question and I answer something else, that is, I am offending you. So the same thing they are doing against Krishna. Krishna is telling, okay, surrender unto me. They don't surrender. And Bhagavad Gita, what yoga is presented in Bhagavad Gita primarily? What is the main teaching of Bhagavad Gita? It is bhakti. And they are not teaching bhakti. Because if one has to teach bhakti, then there has to be a bhakta, and there has to be a Bhagavan, and then there is bhakti. If Bhagavan is denied, and if they say everything is one, then there is no concept of bhakti at all. And there is nothing as temporary bhakti. Bhakti is eternal. So there is nothing like, you know, I will do some bhakti to get something else. That's not actually bhakti. And there is no bhakti by killing Bhagavan. There is no bhakti like that. So they are Mayavadis to a great degree. they may not understand the philosophical aspect to a great degree, but some are strict Mayavadi, some are confused, plus they have definitely they have Mayavad element because they deny the form of the Lord. So it's very important that we understand. We cannot come to a sentimental platform that, oh yeah, they are also believing in God, so it's okay, they are also fine. No. What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Mayavadi Maha Aparadhi. There is no, it's clear cut. There is no, it's a black and white. There is no gray area. Mayavadi Maha Aparadhi. It's a Maha Aparadhi unto the feet of Krishna. Because the atheist is a fool. Because he wants to enjoy the material world. It's foolish. It is just ignorance. However, when one is actually a Mayavadi impersonalist, he is demonstrating envy to the Lord. Because they cannot accept the form of the Lord. They cannot accept the Lord. That is the, everywhere the envy element is there, but this is the direct confronting aspect of envy. Very clearly saying, you know, I don't want to follow. You don't exist. You don't exist. So, but I exist. I am God. So this is the the peak of envy. We have to be careful about. Okay.
And Jivatma and Paramatma is completely different.
Yeah.
But here in our sampradaya, we say the Jivatma Paramatma is the same at the same time. It's a different. Why within the Vaishnavas community it is so sharp?
Okay. Difference? I'll briefly explain that. So when Madhvacharya's photo, I used to see Madhvacharya's photo from my childhood. So I used to see like this, you know. But first we will think it is a victory, you know. People. Definitely he was victorious in his presentation of the philosophy, but it's not victory. It is showing too. He's emphasizing the dualism so strongly to defeat the impersonal Mayavadis. So that's why the whole oldest pictures, it was very interesting. Oldest pictures you can see him, you know, a strong, stout body, you know, big muscles, and, you know, sitting, you know, chadar on top, and, you know, it's just two. This is like this. He was indeed, he was victorious. So why there are many philosophies even within Vaishnavism? Okay. So the reason is different acharyas came with different purposes and they emphasized different aspects of the same philosophy. Okay. So when Ramanujacharya came, his philosophy is known as qualified oneness or Vishishta Advaita. Qualified. So he didn't completely deny the oneness aspect. At the same time, he told this oneness has varieties. Qualified. It has qualification. It is qualified or Vishishta. So that's why in Ramanujacharya's philosophy, there is definitely distinction between the Lord, the living entities and material creation. And when it came to, so he accepted the oneness and at the same time he accepted the differences in terms of Vishishta, there are varieties. He accepted the varieties. However, he didn't strongly, completely defeat all the Mayavadis. So, Madhvacharya, that is one difference. Second difference is, Ramanujacharya used Vedic authorities only, primarily Vedic authorities was the main. He used other Puranas, Vedic authorities he used. Vedic means, meaning the four Vedas and Upanishads. He used that Shruti as one of the main tool for arguments, basis of arguments. And when it came to Madhvacharya wanted to defeat impersonalism completely. So it is mentioned that Madhvacharya, he had a vision of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed him. He got the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach against Mayavad philosophy. So he stressed so much the difference aspect, that is the Jiva and the Supreme Absolute are completely different. So his philosophy is known as Pancha Bheda Tattva. Panja Bheda. So he was stressing on Bheda, the differences. And when it came to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he combined all the philosophies. He could explain all the philosophy. He could explain Advaita, the monistic philosophy, he could explain. Vishishtadvaita, he could explain this Dvaita, everything. He could, so Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is a comprehensive philosophy in which all other philosophies are just subsets. You understand? This is a superset. The Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva is a superset, and all other philosophies are subset of it, including the monistic philosophy. It's a subset. So that's why, since everything is subset, so it's a comprehensive package. So it is inconceivable. It is beyond the normal understanding, because it has contradictory elements coming together. Because the Lord is like that. Lord can handle contradictions. Lord can handle contradictions. So his philosophy also. Yeah.
But Mahaprabhu never supported Mayavadi philosophy.
No, never. He never supported Mayavadi philosophy. It is not that he supported Mayavadi philosophy, but the oneness aspect was included in our philosophy, in its right way. Mayavad Sarvanash. So he never recommended hearing the Mayavad philosophy, but the element of oneness, he took it out and he explained in the right way. Thank you for that. Yes, ma'am. Okay, that's a it's a good question, and it is a very, very good question actually. That how can we conceive someone who is inconceivable? So the answer is, the Lord has the inconceivable energy that he can give us, through which we can conceive the inconceivable. So the Lord can give the inconceivable energy so that we can experience the inconceivable. So that is the inconceivable energy of the Lord. That's the inconceivable mercy of the Lord. So one can conquer the unconquerable. What is the secret in Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, in the 14th chapter? Lord Brahma very nicely explains this. Jnane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivandi sanmukharidam bhavadiya vartam sthane sthida shrudigatam tanuvan manobhir ye prayaso api jita jito pyasi daistrilokyam. The formula is, Jnane prayasam udapasya. First give up all the tendencies to speculate and to understand the Lord by one's own intelligence. Jnane prayasam udapasya. Namanta eva. You pay obeisances unto him. Jivandi sanmukharitam bhavatiya vartam. Then live in a community of the devotees, hearing the glories of the Lord. Then sthane sthita is very important. Sthane sthita means, in whichever social condition you are in, just stay in that condition. That is not an obstacle for devotional service. One can be a family man, one can be a grihastha, one can be brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyas, doesn't matter. Whatever stitha, wherever you are, no problem. You don't have to change. As far as you have association of the devotees, you don't have to go anywhere else. Now think, okay, I want to go to Vrindavan because I have to practice Krishna consciousness. No, sthane sthita, just be here in Melbourne in the association of the devotees. Shrudigatam tanuvan manobhir. Then the most important point comes. For that, everyone needs the BMW, right? Everyone needs a BMW to push on this aspect of Krishna consciousness. What is that BMW? Body, mind and words. So engage your body, mind and words in service of Krishna. That is sthane sthita shruti tanuvan manobhir. Then ye prayaso ajita jito apyasi taistrilokyam. Then one can conquer the unconquerable. Ajita jita. Ajita means one who is unconquerable. Jita means one can conquer. So this is the mercy of the Lord, and this is because of the inconceivable mercy of the Lord. So we can understand inconceivable Lord by his inconceivable mercy. Yeah. Clear? This is referring to the 10th canto, 14th chapter. Anyone knows the verse number? Maybe beginning verses, 3 or 4, yeah, the beginning verses of the 14th chapter of 10th canto. Yeah. Okay. No final questions? Fine. Thank you very much. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sitaya Gora Premanande.